Freunde, herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Episode von Erlebnis Irland. Heute nehmen wir euch mit auf die Beara-Halbinsel im Südwesten Irlands. Eine Landschaft voller Geschichten, Anliegen und Inspiration. Wir sprechen heute mit dem Autor Sean Michael Sullivan, der in seinen historischen Romanen das Leben seiner irischen Vorfahren auf berührende Weise mit Fiktion verwebt. Es geht um Familie, Geschichte, Humor und um die unerschütterliche irische Seele.
Herzlich willkommen heute zu unserem Podcast Erlebnis Irland. Ich bin euer Host Felicitas, Christoph muss das nachher schneiden und ich sitze hier in einem wunderschönen Haus in Elhees neben einem tollen Autor, der extra aus den USA angereist ist, aus South California. Und er wird sich gleich selber vorstellen. Sein Name ist Sean und ich übergebe jetzt das Mikro, nachdem ich eine englische Einführung gemacht habe. Hello, this is your host Felicitas from Podcast Erlebnis Ireland. We are here in Elhees, wonderful house, wonderful region, wonderful locality. And I'm sitting next to a famous author here, whom he made his debut yesterday in a lecture in Elhees. His name is Sean, and he will introduce himself now.
I'm Sean Michael Sullivan. My heart is very near and dear to the Beara Peninsula. And my ancestry runs very, very deep here. Back in the year about 2016, I began doing genealogical research, and I was able to find out quite a bit about six generations that go back in the Beara Peninsula. My father was from there. My father was from Leighan Moor, and he passed away in the year 2013 at the age of 93. But he actually had immigrated over to the United States at the age of about 29 or 30. He was part of a family of 11, but he was the only one of his family that immigrated. So he spent about 2/3 of his life in the United States, but his fondness for his culture and for Ireland was very, very rich.
So you've chosen Beara, and specifically the 1900s, as the setting of both of your novels. What is it about Beara that inspires your storytelling?
Well, after doing all that genealogical research, again, it went back about six generations. And initially, I was just very intrigued by my paternal grandparents. His name was Patrick O'Sullivan. But he was better known as Patsy Barnick. Barnick was kind of a family sect name. And my grandmother was Kate O'Sullivan, same name, but she was from a different part of Beara. She was from the Ross McCowan area. And what really intrigued me about the two of them was the fact that he was a 38-year-old widower, because he had a previous family, and he was a stonemason by trade, and he met and married in the year 1908, Kate O'Sullivan. She also came from an extremely large family. She had 13 brothers and sisters. But Patsy's first wife, Ellen, her maiden name was Broderick, Ellen Broderick. She died in 1905 of consumption. And then just a month after she died, their youngest child died as well of consumption, which was very prevalent back in those days. So that relationship, the fact that my 38-year-old grandfather somehow got together with this 20-year-old woman. He had seven children. I can almost see where she'd be attracted, or I should say he'd be attracted to her, but I'm not so sure why she'd be attracted to him at that stage. So it really intrigued me, and I decided to pursue that. I did more research genealogically. I researched the area of Bera in depth. I've made numerous trips over here. And so I developed, throughout my entire life, I kind of wanted to write. I wanted to do some fiction writing. But the opportunity was never afforded because I was a high school English teacher and also a baseball coach. Okay. So I was very, very busy with that. And of course, family and other life responsibilities. Life gets in the way sometimes. And so it never offered me that opportunity until I never really felt, never had any strong feelings of a subject to write on until this came about. So right around the time I was doing that genealogical research, learning more and more about my paternal grandparents and so on, it just all fit in as I was at that stage retiring from being an English teacher for 37 years.
That sounds very interesting, but I believe so that life can come into the way. It sometimes happens, but it's nevertheless really lovely that you fought for the idea and went back to it and put it onto paper. Sometimes you can say you were written, not you write, kind of. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's if you're into it, if you have passion about it, then you sometimes get the energy and you don't know where it comes from, but it's there. So can you give our listeners a brief overview of the two novels? What stories are you telling and how do they connect with the region?
Okay, thank you. As I was beginning to develop some ideas creatively, again, that question, the core question for me for the first novel, which is the Bargain of Bera, was that relationship between my grandfather and grandmother, what would bring them together? So I developed fictional characters. Now, I should say up front that both of these books, even though they are historical fiction, there's a great deal of truth in both books, whether that's factual information about births and deaths and marriages and so on. I tried to stay very true to those things when it came to my family. My grandmother in particular, Kate O'Sullivan, I just so admired her. Never met her. She actually passed away in 1973. Of course, my grandfather, he died my father was only 13 years old when his father passed away. So I wanted to develop that, and so I had some fictional characters, including a few meddling Irish priests that got involved in putting these two people together. There were even some Royal Navy soldier or sailors from Bantry Bay right there at that time period. There was so much of that history where the British Navy was in the bay. And so that's how I kind of developed the Bargain of Bera. It's a mix of, it's serial comic because it's a mix of, there were some family tragedies. Patsy and Kate had 11 children, but they also had a few that died in childbirth. My father's sister, and I didn't learn this from my father because he, like that, anybody in that generation, I think they didn't like to talk about the difficulties. They only wanted to talk about the good things. So I learned through my research that my father had a sister that passed away the day after his father died. So in 1932, when Patsy Barnick passed away, one day later, my father's 16-year-old sister also died. So it was those kind of things, those difficulties, those family difficulties are a part of it. But I injected a great deal of humor into the story as well because they persevere, they get by, and they, you know, the love of the family and so on, I tried to bring that out. So those priests, the characters of the three priests from the three different parishes, They are probably the most humorous element in the book because they meet at McCarthy's Bar right in downtown there in the Castletown Bear. And so that's how the first book came about. I had no idea when I was writing the first book that I would ever write another book. But I had the writing bug at that stage. So it was probably less than 2 months after I published The Bargain of Berra that I decided to, because I had pursued, in doing the research, I had learned of my uncle, Tim O'Sullivan. He was in the Irish Republican Army. So he was a freedom fighter. And none of my cousins who live here in Ireland know too much about that. Or even if they do know a bit about it, they're not saying too much about it. So I pursued that idea then for the second novel. That was kind of the whole theme of the second book.
This really sounds interesting. As you mentioned, you use localities that are on the island so that people that know the peninsula, they will get back to the places. So there would be a Sean Sullivan trail maybe someday, which would be nice, wouldn't it? So the landscape really influences the mood or themes, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Even in the introduction to The Bargain of Berra, I mentioned the fact that Berra itself is almost like a character in the book. And again, there's various settings, whether it's downtown Castletown Bear or whether it is at the Sacred Heart Church, McCarthy's Bar, Alahees to some extent, Leehan Moor in definitely is a prominent place because of where they lived at the time. Even in The Bargain of Berra, I even include the Bearhaven golf course. And there's a whole story involving a couple of the, part of the story involves a couple of sailors that are British that also happen to be Catholic. So they go to the Sacred Heart Church in town. And one of the priests finagles a little deal with them and gets them involved in the whole process, even though they're kind of unaware of what they're involved in. The priest involves them in getting them to kind of finagle Patsy and Kate into that relationship.
Wow. So there's a lot of work involved. Did you write it here in Berra, or did you write the whole books in the U.S.?
Oh, I live in California, live in Southern California, not too far from Los Angeles, and all of my work was there. Some of the settings, even I used like Google Maps and so on to develop some of my ideas. So, by and large, even some of the setting things were just things that I had to imagine. Even on Google, I used Google Earth, going down roadways and so on to try to develop those thoughts. And but of course, as I said, I've been over here a number of times as well. So when it came to the second book, A Berra Volunteer, I was actually over here in 2022. That was my last time over. And I had probably more than half the book done at that stage. And I came over with a cousin and we visited some of the sites of ambushes and things during the Irish War of Independence. In so doing that, when I came home, I was really fired up to develop those ideas and include those into the book as well.
Okay. So, if you put everything together, so you have an image of real people in mind, real locations in mind, real history in mind, and then you put it together. Is there even a bit of folklore in your writings or not?
That's a great question. when it came to storytelling, of course, the Irish are very well known for their storytelling. And I don't necessarily mean in writing. A lot of it is oral history and storytelling. There were a couple of writers that I've admired that I was able to kind of delve into that a little bit. And as I was up at Alahee's last night at the Copper Mine Museum, I read a passage from the second book that involved, it's just a postman who's telling the story of where he's delivering mail right up here in the Alahee's area. And he ends up having a goat jump in the back of his horse cart and chewing up some of the mail. So just little things like that. I wanted it to be to follow the traditions of Irish storytelling. That particular incident that I just described really has no bearing on the story of Tim O'Sullivan, the freedom fighter that was in the IRA, and yet it just gives the story color and flavor.
And it's also fun read then, because if people smile, then they keep reading longer, which I also love. So if I have a book and then I can smile a little bit, it helps to read. So you took a while for writing those novels. How long did it take you to write each book, and did the process change between the two?
Each book, by the time I began writing The Bargain of Bera, again, I had done so much of the genealogical research. And so when I began putting it all into focus, it was a little more than a year writing The Bargain of Bera, I'd say. First draft. And then, of course, comes a lot of revision and so forth. As a high school English teacher, I taught generally sophomores and juniors in high school, and some of the novels that we would read, and I would get response from students and so on, some positive, often negative. I tried to learn from that and use that experience in my own writing. So I try to keep chapters short. Most chapters aren't more than about 1,500 to 2,000 words. A few of them are a bit longer, but some of them are a bit shorter as well. So just to capture the audience and keep them enthralled in it, I tried to do that. Because some of the books that we would read in classes, for example, Lord of the Flies. We read Lord of the Flies. I did that book for years. And the student... It's a good book. But students hated the long chapters, especially ones that would have long descriptions of the jungle and so on, and plant life and all these kind of things. They absolutely hated that kind of thing. By the same token... we did Catcher in the Rye. And with Catcher in the Rye, I often got a very positive response because the chapters are fairly short. There's a lot of humor and sarcasm in that. So I tried to use that in my own, not necessarily stylistically, as much as maybe formatting and so forth.
Okay. So did you write with a local audience in mind? People who know Bera intimately, or are you hoping to introduce Bera to new readers globally?
I can't really say that I had a local audience in mind when I wrote. Ultimately, I think I had to satisfy myself when I wrote. but I've always believed that West Cork and Bera, that there would be a good deal of interest in the books. But this is honestly, this particular weekend that we're in now is the first time that I've really promoted the books here, other than a little bit of social media. I did a little bit of Instagram targeted advertising a couple years ago, which had a bit of success, but not a lot. So this has been gratifying to come here and be able to go to the Alahis Copper Mine Museum last night and do that presentation. And then at Polly's bookshop in Castletown Bear, she very graciously agreed to have some of the books in her shop. So maybe it'll expand from there, and maybe I'll even get a German audience. You just never know.
For sure, because it really seems to be a very lovely read, so very enjoyable. Mm-hmm. So we talk about the themes and messages in your books now. What themes do you find yourself returning to in your work, and are there messages you hope readers take away from the novels?
Aside from the fact that I wanted to pay tribute to my grandparents, and then with the second book, to my uncle, and other family, of course, family members that are all engaged with that. Thematically, I wanted to show just the Irish spirit and how it can overcome difficulty, and how with a little bit of wit and a little bit of grit and perseverance, that all that can come about.
Are there particular Irish or West Cork literate traditions or writers who influenced you? You mentioned Catcher in the Rye before, but that's...
I wouldn't say either of those books influenced me, other than, again, as I mentioned before, other than with structure and... certainly not thematically, neither of those books. A writer that I would say really influenced me was Frank McCourt, who did Angela's Ashes. I think that's just a wonderful book because, like my own books, and I don't pretend for one moment to be on Frank McCourt's level, but my own books are a good mix of the humor and wit in some very trying and difficult circumstances. In Frank McCourt's memoir, he, of course, tells that story in Angela's Ashes at some length of his own boyhood, dealing with an alcoholic father, mother who had to deal with that. And so in the midst of all that, in the midst of that difficulty and ugliness and poverty that they lived in, he had such a sense of humor and such a positive view of life. And so that really influenced me.
How have people around here responded to the books? Have you heard from readers who recognize themselves or their stories or the stories of the ancestors in your work?
Yes, it was great last night being at the Alahis Copper Mine Museum, talking with various people who either had some close connection to some of my ancestors, or maybe a distant connection in some way. For example, we met an older gentleman who was 82 years old. His name was Harrington, Vincent Harrington. And Vincent was able to tell me that he, at a very young age in the 1950s, we're talking about 75 years ago, so he would have been 7, 8 years old. He remembered my uncle, Peter O'Sullivan, who was my dad's younger brother. Peter passed away during a wedding ceremony in the early 1950s, at the young age of 23, I believe he was. My father had just immigrated a couple years before, so he was not at this wedding, but his brother Peter died at that time. And so connections like that, we had a connection today, just amazing connection. The second book, which is about Tim O'Sullivan, Tim would have been my uncle. Tim, of course, is the central character in the second book. And we were standing, waiting to get on the cable car, waiting to come back. And these three people walked up, and I hear a couple of them talking, and the older woman says, "I recognize him from somewhere." And the other one said, "Well, yeah, we saw him in the newspaper, in the Southern Star newspaper." And I said, "That's me." And so we get talking with this woman, and she knew two or three of my cousins. She actually knew Hannah O'Sullivan, who came from this area near Alahees. Hannah is a character in the book because she wedded in the year 1925. She married Tim O'Sullivan. Beyond 1925, I had no records, because sometimes the records, whether it's birth, marriage, death, those drive the story a little bit. And beyond 1925, other than their marriage record, which was in, they got married at the Collins Barracks in Cork, I had no more information about them. Now, the book doesn't go too much farther beyond 1925 anyway, so that was convenient. But, my wife, Debbie, will tell you that we've just marveled over the last 2 days at the at various connections we've made with people that knew my, I don't think we've met anybody yet that knew my dad, but they knew my dad's brothers, or they knew perhaps someone else that lived down at the Lehan Moor area. So that's been very gratifying.
But maybe if one person from Alahees or Castle Down Bear hears or listens to the podcast, which may happen, so they can go back to you and maybe know your dad or knew your dad, and if they get any information, you will happy to receive them. So are you also planning to continue writing stories set here in Beara, or are you exploring other places and genres next?
I'm currently in the third book. And again, just like with the other two, when I wrote The Bargain of Beara, I had no idea I was going to write another book on the same kind of level, you know, same setting and so on. So it was shortly thereafter that I began A Beara Volunteer. Well, right now, I've written, it's probably about 70% complete. And that story, that novel will be called From Beara to Butte, Flurry's story. Flurry is my father. And so that's kind of what I'm developing now. And I've got probably about 2/3 of it done at this stage. So when we get back from our trip, I'll be launching back onto the keyboard and developing that story.
Okay, then you could also listen to our podcast, because we did a really nice interview with the people of Butte when they were here. And it's in English, so you will understand a lot of it. And maybe you'll get some insight there too, which would be nice. Would you ever consider adapting your novels for the screen, perhaps a Beara-based drama series?
I would love to have my novels adapted for the screen. That would be fantastic. In fact, maybe a mini-series or something for television. That would be outstanding. I'd love to have Colin Farrell as one of my characters, you know, the actor. In
Colin, if you hear that.
And as a matter of fact, I don't know if you know, but Colin Farrell has on a number of occasions says that Castletown Bear is his favorite place in Ireland. It'd be a win-win. Perhaps he could play the part of Patsy Barnick or something of that nature. There's plenty of good Irish actors out there that could fill the roles as well. But adapted to film would be fantastic.
Okay. Finally, for listeners who haven't yet read your novels, where should they start? And what's the best way to get a copy?
The locals can perhaps get their copy at Polly's Bookshop in Castletown Bear. There's some books as well still available at the Alahees Copper Mine Museum. Other than that, there are any number of online sources. To search for it, you would just use my name, Sean M. Sullivan. And I think you anybody could find the book there. Amazon is what the Amazon Kindle publishers is where it was originally published. So, but I've marveled at the fact that I can go on a certain website, even Waterstones, which is in Cork City, or I've had other people tell me about other sites and so on where they've been able to find the book. So it is available on expanded distribution. So I don't think anybody would have trouble finding either of those books at this stage. But my Instagram site is CoachSully1. CoachSully1. So I think anybody could also get some information there.
That's because of your coaching background, too.
I've been too lazy to change my name.
Okay, thank you very much. Do you have anything you want to add?
This experience has been incredible. If anybody would have told me a week ago that I'd be talking to a very fine German lady who's doing a podcast, I would have told them they were absolutely out of their mind. This, along with the other things that have happened in just in the last 48 hours, has been absolutely wonderful.
But you earned it, so you can say you really earned it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. Hope to hear you again for your third novel, and have a lovely day.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the opportunity.
And thanks for listening.
Das war unsere Episode mit Sean Michael Sullivan, dessen Romane The Bargain of Beara and A Beara Volunteer ihr in Castletown Bear oder online finden könnt. Wenn euch diese Episode gefallen hat, abonniert Erlebnis Irland, um keine weiteren Gespräche mit Autorinnen, Künstlern und Menschen von der Grünen Insel zu verpassen. Slán, auf Wiedersehen. Bis bald, euer Chris.